Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. Are you ready to be a rock star? Achieve incredible success in your life, business, and career? Learn the inside scoop on how these rockstar achievers have jumped over hurdles, plowed through roadblocks, scaled their dreams to great heights, and made powerful changes within their communities. And here's your Rockstar Achievers host, Catherine M. White, the Rockstar Maker and founder of Accelerated Results 365.
Welcome to today's episode of Rockstar Achievers. Today we're going to be speaking with a gentleman who has experienced a series of trauma and addiction throughout his life, in addition to great success. And I brought this gentleman on today because we see throughout our world so many people who are suffering and afraid to speak up and share what they're dealing with, and afraid or unknowing as to how to or go about and get help. I would like to introduce to you our guest today, Matt Burton, the author of The Unbound Man, Breaking Free from the Shackles of Trauma Experienced by Men. He is a social entrepreneur, father of three, and also a grandfather of three. Having started many profit and not-for-profit organizations, he reached high levels of success at a young age and was recognized by Concordia University Board of Regents and Board of Directors as an alumni ambassador exemplifying organizational and nonprofit leadership success. Despite Matt's charisma, humor, and early success, his life has not been free of challenges and trauma. He has survived abuse, overcome addiction, and battled cancer, and now he uses his experiences to help other men heal from the invisible and unspoken effects of trauma. From group homes to college campuses, from prisons to boardrooms, Matt has helped thousands of men heal from trauma, loss, addiction, and pain, and reclaim their lives. Matt, welcome to our show today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
You're welcome. It is an honor to have you, Matt. You know, I have a lot of guests that have been through challenging times, and I love to hear their stories and have them share those stories so that they can get their message out there and make an impact on people who need to hear it. The stories that you have to share is a bit different than what I've had before. And really it gets into a much more serious and emotional realm than what I usually have. So, and it's not an easy topic to talk about.
Sure.
So, yeah. what impresses, or one of the things that impresses me about your story, Matt, is that you did come from this, or you have come from this background of having been very successful and having created success at a very young age. And for you to be able to have the courage to come out and share your story is amazing. You know, a lot of people in your position, that's like one of the last things that they would want to do because of fear of that ruining their success.
Well, I think it's all a matter of perspective. I think that it's my belief that people are inspired by triumph over tragedy as opposed to just triumph. And so I heard it said early on in my process of getting better that there is no testimony without a test. So, and you're right that some people have more to lose, I suppose, than others. But if they looked at it differently, they actually have a bigger platform to help more people, which is just the view that I've taken.
Right, and I would agree with that, definitely. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about your successes and what kind of things have you done and how did you create your success?
Well, that's a good, that's there's different parts of success. And the thing that's interesting, and part of it's my own process of what is success. So my first success was in sports, and then that translated itself into the disciplines of sports help out in business. And I think that's a lot of reason why you see a lot of certain types of personalities, A-type personalities that are very competitive and very driven. That's one reason why you see so many of them in high levels of leadership, is because athletics teaches you sacrifice, and it teaches you to battle through things that you don't want to. And business is hard and it's competitive. And so that helped me. I started my first company when I was 16 years old, Romeo Productions, and it was a DJ company. And so I just started doing dances and all that, and was good at that. I've always had the ability to inspire people and to get them excited and all that. And so use that with the power of music, which is really just emotion. Music is, and I did well with that. So I was a radio DJ for Z100 Radio. I actually, everything I've done is I found something that I had interest in or I wanted to do. I would find out who is the best person that does that, and I would ask them to be my mentor or coach. So at the time, Z100 was the top radio station in the city of Portland. I became an intern, so I worked for free there, hung out with the DJs, including Chet Buchanan, who was the youngest music director in the history of radio, who worked there and is a great, great DJ. And I asked him to teach me how. And so he taught me. And so I went from being just some guy to being Romeo Blue, which is my DJ name, Romeo Productions, Romeo Blue. And I was on the air within 6 months with that radio station. And that made my company huge, because everybody wanted Romeo Blue and Romeo Productions to do their high school and college dances and junior high dances and do their weddings, etc. So my company went from me to me and a lot of other people, and the largest in the state of Oregon by the time I was 21. So that was the first.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I love that you started that when you were still in high school at the age of 16.
Well, not in high school. So I was one of those people that went to school late. And so, or early, or however it is. And so I graduated when I was 16. So it was that summer of my, between high school and college that I started Romeo Productions.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you, okay. Graduated at 16. Wish I could have done that.
I was really into school. So I just wanted to get out. So yeah. So I did that. Yeah, and then started doing business from there. So, and started, got into that, and then just continued to, and you have my resume there. I ended up becoming the CEO of 8 different companies, for-profit companies and 2 different nonprofit companies over the next, from 1987 until last year. So everything from healthcare to continuing education, a lot of stuff around helping people to heal. So helping Men Heal Itself, the organization. I started an organization to train kids on how to do musical performance and use sports and athletics. We used it because I was a Christian. We had become a Christian by then to be evangelistic. So I had an organization that did that. Worked on Indian reservations for 10 years, serving thousands of Native American kids and their families and helping them. So did that. So it's done a lot of different stuff.
Let's go back to the radio show. You had this this very successful radio show. What happened to that, and how did you go from that into all of these other businesses?
No, so that's a good question. So I got in the door, had my DJ company, Little Romeo Productions. It got big. And it's interesting that you asked that question because I was on Z, and there was some political stuff going on. So we had a sister station, the AM station, had been around for 25 years, KEX Radio in Portland. And the main star of that show's son worked for Z100. But he wasn't a radio DJ. He was he worked in different, did other things, but he really wanted to be one. And so from a political standpoint, there came a point where they basically gave him my, they gave him my show. So I moved on and DJed for KZMG Magic 93.1 in Boise for a little while, and then just kind of stepped away from it. Came back from Boise to Portland and continued to do all of my Romeo production stuff. And we ended up doing 800 performances in about 6 years or so. But actually, in some ways, it was I wouldn't call it failure because I didn't do anything wrong, but just politics moved me out of that. And it was exactly the same time that I was struggling in other parts of my life. And so I just decided that I didn't really want to get back into radio. And in fact, since 1992, I haven't done anything in a major capacity in media until now.
So Matt, you had mentioned earlier that failure is a part of success and we can't have success without failure. So how has failure impacted your life and the success that you've achieved?
Why, when people talk to me about success and being successful, or that I've been successful, it's really a mixed feeling for me, because failure has been so much a part of my success that sometimes I don't feel like I've had a lot of success. So most people in life that are in radio never, ever, ever get to the level that I was at, because I'm not doing it anymore, and I didn't continue to do it. And one reason why is because somebody chose to choose somebody that wasn't me to continue to do it. And so sometimes my doing new things has been based out of losing things that I was trying to do. So the radio station, as an example, I was going through a very, very hard time. My trauma and all the stuff I was going through was at a really, really high level. So I shut down Romeo Productions about 4 years after I stopped with doing radio. And I shut it down because my business model didn't work. And here's what I mean. So people wanted me because I was Romeo Blue and I was this local, not national, but local celebrity. And I was a really, really, really good DJ. I knew how to motivate people and get them all fired up and have 1,000 people pulsating to the beat of the music. And I used to perform live because I was a very good dancer. And that was back in the days of Michael Jackson and Prince. So I used to wear costumes and outfits and get on speakers and have girls screaming and throwing bras. It was pretty crazy. Not your normal DJ dance experience. And I did that, but I couldn't replicate that unless it was me. And so I didn't know how to do anything small at the time. And so I shut it down because I just couldn't replicate it at the end of the day. But I was also at the same time starting to come to grips with a lot of the trauma that I've experienced in my life and had some things happen that were really super re-traumatizing for me. It didn't really allow me to continue to run a business. And so I shut that company down and just stepped away from anything that was business related. Got a job at an insurance company and was as a sales rep, basically, or an insurance agent, and just did phone sales for a couple of years. But of course, I have a gift in sales and influence, and so I became very successful at that. But then there was interference with that job as well, with regards to some trauma I was experiencing or trying to process and stuff. And so I ended up getting a job with Blue Cross Blue Shield as a marketing rep, and then became the state rep for Dencor. And so things just continued to progress from there with regards to me being involved in insurance. But at the end of the day, I just had to come back to working for myself, the creativity and just the ability to do my own thing. And so I just walked away from that in 2000 or so and just started building companies again.
You talked about this trauma that started to resurface and impact your life, but it sounds like you continued to push forward and you were working in various jobs, starting various businesses, How were you able to do that despite what was going on in your personal life?
Well, the short answer is that my greatest wounding in a lot of ways is the fear of being not insignificant and not enough. And so I would just push. And I'll tell you, as somebody who's helped a lot of really successful people work through a lot of their stuff, is that it's a very common way for people to respond to trauma is to try to become wealthy, try to become powerful, admit that those people that did bad things to me and hurt me in my life, that they were right, and that I didn't have value and worth, etc. And so I was determined to prove them wrong, and so I didn't stop.
Uh-huh. So this was almost like a way, sounds like it was maybe like a way for you to hide and not face what was going on, or?
Yeah, it's that. It's a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. It's just a way to try to be somebody, and I would agree that there is a part of it that has to do with not facing it. And so when you feel feelings, and of course I wrote the book Being a Bad Man, and so it talks about male trauma and abuse and all that, but it also talks about masculinity, and as guys we really aren't given permission to be weak or to stop and look at stuff. We just need to continue to power through. That's how we're evaluated as men. And so I was drinking the juice and buying the narrative around that, and a very high level. And some people do it in different levels, but it's pretty prominent and pretty specific and pretty consistent among men in general. So I was just doing what guys do, which is just not stop and just to keep on pushing.
So would you say there was a connection or a disconnection between how you appeared publicly versus how you appeared in private?
Do you mean the guy they called Romeo Blue? I think that probably explains it. So, so I had a persona. I have in Strength Finders, my number one strength is influence. And so I could get 1,000 people to follow me off of a bridge and then ask 20 minutes later, why are we falling? So influence is a big thing that I have. And I know that. And so I could pretend, I could play it up, I could look the part, and it got me by because people wouldn't ask. They would just assume. In fact, one of my employees that told me once, we were in a staff meeting and we were doing trauma-informed practices around our staff meetings, because at that point I'd been well down the road and knew how to help my employees as well. And they said, "Oh, Matt, I didn't know that you needed us to tell you you were doing a good job, because you're just so confident that nobody needed to tell you that, because we figured you already knew that." So when you come across as strong and competent and all that stuff, then it's pretty easy, and people don't really think anything of it. So yeah, it was pretty easy for me to do that, and I, you know, played it up pretty good, because I was making $200 an hour when I was DJing. I was doing that, and I always had really super attractive girlfriends and all these things. So people always thought that. I always assumed that I had it going on, and I didn't. That's an understatement. I was just in a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm. That's true for a lot of people. We look at others. I think especially when we look inside ourselves and we know what's going on for ourselves, we know the challenges, the struggles, and trauma or whatever it is that we're facing in our own lives, and then we look at others like people are looking at you, and we think that, yeah, they've got it made. They don't have the challenges that I have. They don't have the problems that I have. And then it creates a lot of envy, and, you know, it can create a lot of negativity between people. And it's unfortunate, because just basically what you're saying here is it doesn't matter how confident you are or how confident you appear to be, could be something going on inside, something deep, something serious. And so people are not seeing that, and they're misjudging us because of what they don't see. And so many of us do that.
I've got a big fat Rolodex, and I know a lot of people, and I know a ton of people that are, and almost all the people that I'm around, spend time with, et cetera, are super successful people in the world's eyes. And a lot of them are just drowning. And they come talk to me because they knew that I had, one, had some success in my life, and secondly, knew that that wasn't good enough and that there was way more than that. And so that's given me an entree into a lot of people that not just because, not for lots of reasons, but just that's a gift that I've been given, is to be able to help people. So.
And well, in order for you to do that, you had to first make that realization yourself in creating awareness around what was going on in your own life and acknowledging that you needed to do something about it. You needed some help. How did you come to that realization?
You know, I saw many of the things that I was really striving for, or I thought were going to make me happy. I thought that if I got those things that I would, that would be the case for me. Whether it be who I was with, who I was dating, or what I was driving, or whatever, or how I was being perceived. So in 1992, everything changed for me. So I had gone through an experience, lots of different things. I had gotten a girl pregnant who had an abortion that was pretty impactful for me in a negative way. I had gotten into a situation where one of the companies that I was doing, what I was running at the time, was really struggling. There's just a lot of stuff going on. I was not with my daughter's mom at the time, and was just trying to sleep my way through things and just go out with as many women and be with as many women and a certain type of woman and a certain look and all this stuff, all these things that I thought, oh, if I had her, that would be great. And oh, if I got this, oh, that would be great. And it just was super unsatisfying to me. And so there just came a point where it was just too much. And so I knew that I was super unhappy. I knew all these things, and I knew that my behaviors were getting out of control with regards to eating too much of this, and I was working 90 hours a week, and so my life was completely unbalanced. And my now ex-wife, but girlfriend of my mom, the mom of my kid and all that, my daughter and all that at the time, got me this book called The Sexual Healing Journey by Wendy Maltz, which is a book that basically talks about sex abuse survivors, which I never thought of myself as being one, but thankfully she heard enough of my story that she caught onto that and gave me that book. And that was really the book that started to turn my life around.
Wow. And okay, so then you turned your life around, and now you use those experiences to help other people. How did you come about making this decision that you were going to go on this journey of helping others heal?
First of all, turning your life around is like turning it around 1 inch at a time. So I don't want there to be any perception, and I'm still turning my life around. So healing is ing, not ed for me. It's not healed, it's healing. And so but to answer your question specifically, because of just my own personality type, when I got into recovery, both addiction recovery from three different addictions, and then started dealing with my sexual abuse and being physically abused, sexually abused, emotionally, blah, 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 all that. When I would find something that worked for me, I shared it with others. And so my personality is, I like to share and I like to help people. And so when I would find a tool on shame, because most people deal with shame, but sex abuse survivors deal with shame on a whole nother level. It's just constant and pervasive. And when I started to get some victory over that, I would share with other people I knew that would struggle with that stuff. So that's how I got, that's how I started helping people, is I would find things that I would do the work, and I would find out of the 10 things that a counselor would try on me, 4 of them or 3 of them would work. And those 3, I would share with as many people as I could that I thought would benefit from them. And so I turn around 20 something years later, and there's just been thousands of men and their families that have benefited from me just sharing with them what's helped me, but also walking with them. So as I've been doing this for a while, people would hear, I don't know how, but they would hear that I could help them in some capacity. And so I would get invited. This is a joke. I always know that when men invite me to coffee, that I'm going to be hanging out with them for the next 3 years. So I, because they're just going to tell me stuff and ask for help. And so I've been a conduit mostly for people, because I know a lot of counselors, and I've had a lot of them work for me and companies that I've started and all that. But so I've had a lot of people work for me over the years who are super qualified in lots of different areas, but or other counselors or other tools that I got along the way. And I just would share them with people, and then people would get better. And their wives who are getting ready to leave them because they can't stop looking at porn, and I help them to get into addiction recovery around that issue, and they start to get better. I talk the wife into holding on for just a little while longer, and some of them do, some of them don't. But at the end of the day, the guy, if he sticks with it, starts to get better, or alcohol and drug rehab, or just whatever. And so that's what I've been doing since 1992. And I consider that to be the great success of my life, not any gig, as I would call it. So I just see jobs as, I just see all my work I've done as gigs as CEO. I've done the CEO gig 10 times. As you know, because you and I talked about it, I'm not doing that anymore, because I had another life-changing traumatic event that happened to me a couple of years ago that changed my interest in continuing to be the CEO of everything. So
would you mind sharing a little bit about that? Because I think that is a big part of your story.
Sure. And the thing that I find interesting about the timing of it is, I shared with you before that in 2012 or 2014, I was encouraged to write a book on my story and to really become the voice and face around this stuff. And I went back to New York area, and they said, Matt, you're going to be the next Bropra and all this stuff. And we're all excited about that. And I said, no, because I'd founded 2 companies, had investors, had contributors. I had all these people that had bought into this, and I wasn't going to walk away from it. In 2016, it came up again. And I said, no, because again, I was doing this. And then that changed. And so how that changed is that I was diagnosed with rectal cancer on September 29th of 2017. I had gone in to the doctors. I had a sense earlier that year that there was something was right. I know what it was. And so I went in and saw my doctor, and he said, well, asked me questions, including, have you had any blood in your stool? And I thought, yeah, I suppose I've had a little bit of that. And so he said, well, you're almost 50. You should go get a colonoscopy. So, which is the words that every guy does not want to hear.
Right.
Right up there with, hey, honey, down and talk. So, and do you want to, are you going to get your colonoscopy scheduled? Those are 2 of the most terrifying words that guys have. So I wasn't really feeling that, but I went and did that process. And it's interesting on the timing. So I founded an organization called Helping Men Heal, and Helping Men Heal had its national or international global conference, never been done before, of the top experts from all over the country and around the world coming together to talk about male trauma healing. And so the very day that I was scheduled for that was the very day that this conference started, and I was going to cancel it, but I kept having blood in my stool. I had this bad feeling. And so I got introduced, Matt Burton, CEO, he's the one who put this together, blah, blah, blah. I welcomed everybody, gave him verbal hugs. And then 2 hours later, I was in and the doctors getting asleep getting my colonoscopy. And then the very next day they called me. I was too busy in the middle of some drama that was happening at our conference. And so I got home on Friday night and was talking to my wife a little bit. She went downstairs and went into our office and pulled up the email to say, I wonder what happened with those, with the results. Pulled it up and it said that I was they found a cancerous tumor in me. And that was bad news. And then you start looking it up and really bad statistics about that form of cancer and all this other kind of stuff. And so, but the diagnosis of cancer at age 50, 2 weeks before my 50th birthday, canceled this birthday party we had planned. A couple hundred people were going to come in from all over the place to help me celebrate my birthday, and had been planned for months and all that stuff. And my companies were doing well and everything, all this stuff's happening. And then that happened. And it was really, really super confusing, devastating. And it just left me speechless. And that was the beginning for me of reevaluating again for about the third time in my life what was really important. And it was hard to concentrate building two companies, one nonprofit and one for-profit, in the middle of going through chemo and radiation and major surgeries, etc. So when I was done with that process, one was very completely dependent on me, so that really just went to the wayside. And the other one, I found a CEO to take my place. I handpicked my successor. And then I just walked away from the corporate thing because it was so unimportant to me at the time, because I was just trying to not die. And so I'd spent a lot of time away from my family, being the CEO of everything and success or whatever. And I just done with that. I knew that I had a 70 to 80% chance that I would be alive 5 years from now. But I also had a 20 to 30% chance that I would not. And it was that 20 to 30% that changed my priorities. And I just stepped away from all this stuff. But I wrote a book because I needed to make sure that the legacy of men's healing would be beyond me. There's other people that do it, but probably not as vocally and as guarded as much attention as I have in this process. And so I just put it down in a book that mm-hmm. seems to be pretty transformational for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you say you walked away from your businesses, but you really walked away from a lot more than that. From what we talked about, your whole life pretty much changed you financially and everything. Right.
Yeah, it was pretty expensive. So, it was pretty expensive, and because I was, and part of the process, and it's a very interesting process, and so, but I like to be transparent because I think that it's important. So, I've been successful, very successful, but because I had a company in startup that was helping a lot of people, it was a company that trained clinicians on male trauma healing. So in this space that I've been in helping a lot of people for a lot of years, but again, my relationships, and it was very dependent on me driving it forward at the time. And the company didn't make it out of that process. It was too centric. It was too Matt centric in the beginning, right when I got, so we had investors and a lot of money, a lot of people involved. But to get through, like you have to do, I had to put myself and my family had to sign on the dotted line for a lot of that stuff to make that money move to build these companies. And so I did that, and our family lost everything a year ago because of the fact that my cancer had to become the focus, which means the business could not. And so because everything was tied to us financially, our family lost our 5-bedroom home that we built. Our family lost my Mercedes. We lost everything. My family lost financially. My family lost absolutely everything. And so I had a decision to make because I know how to build companies. I know how to do it again, but I didn't want to like that. And so I got a regular job right now I'm a sales rep for an internet company, for a tech company. So I haven't worked for somebody else for 20, I don't know how long. I don't even remember. It's kind of confusing to even have to ask for vacations. Really confusing for me, actually. So I go, why you will do that? You have to ask for vacation? That's a trip. So I'm just going to Europe right now. That's what I'm used to. But that was a choice, because I could have done it again, but I wasn't going to put my family through it again. Cause it takes 80, 90, 100 hours to build a company, a week to build a company for the first couple, 3 years. That's not uncommon for a lot of entrepreneurs and CEOs. I wasn't willing to do that again. Can't really do that again. My immune system can't handle that. And so I just decided not to do that and to just do what I had time to do, but try to do it in a way that has media connected to it, so as many people can watch that process as possible and get better. So yeah, it's a weird time in life, but it feels very successful to me. I feel more successful now than I have in years and years and years, because I'm closer to my wife than I ever have been, closer to my sons than I ever have been, closer to my daughter, closer to my granddaughters and new grandson than I ever have been. So relationally, my life is very, very successful. When my life was successful in business, it was not very successful relationally. And from the ability to have time to engage with people and to have fun and to relax a little bit. I'm pretty bad at that, but those type of things are things that are part of it now. And so I feel like my life is in a better spot and means more than it ever has, but I have less than I've had in 30 years. And so it's an interesting process.
Yeah. The irony of that, huh?
Yeah. And sometimes I miss the people. I see people driving my car, not my car.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that goes
and all that stuff that you get from all that and the CEO title and just all the things that are, there's lots of benefits to that stuff. So it's different to, for that not to be me, but to be honest with you, I'm choosing for that not to be me, because I could do that again. I know how to do that. So I'm just choosing not to do that. So and when you have a choice, it's different.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the true success lies, is when you have the choice and you follow that decision, right?
Yeah. I think that's the most important. And I also, so if I look at the people, I believe that my job is to lead the men's healing movement. I believe that's my job. So, and that's not a paid job. So it doesn't really matter what my job is. I believe that there's, as I shared with you, 160 million men in the United States, and 30% of those men were physically abused as children statistically. And there's 21 million male survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And there's 40% of men will get cancer in their lifetime. There's a lot of pain and a lot of stuff going on that guys don't really talk about that have impacted them and have impacted their relationships and how they interact with their kids and their partners and all that. And so to me, to have a great impact in that, that would truly be success. And mm-hmm. So that's because I sent you something around my little goals around those things.
Mm-hmm.
And big goals, because there's big pain. Mm-hmm. And so we want to as many people as we can to help men and their loved ones to heal, and boys to heal. And so to me, that's the big assignment. That's the 52 years old, but hey, to me, that's a worthy assignment, and one that doesn't have anything that isn't tied economically. I think there's going to be plenty of economic benefit from it, but at the end of the day, it's just about helping people. So that's what gets me excited. And I think I had mentioned to you before we jumped on this call that we had the very first Unbound Men's Healing group this morning, and just me and a couple other guys on Zoom, but it's the beginning of the process, hopefully in mass, starting to happen. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and what a great time for you to be doing this, because I mean, something like this is always appropriate, of course, because healing for anybody is important, and that ability to heal as a person expands into our families, as you've indicated with your own life. It expands into our families, and then it expands into our world. And yeah, right now we're in this, interestingly enough, the middle of a pandemic that is causing people to take a step back and look and reassess their lives. And you know, I'm hearing about all this going around about healing the world, healing the earth, and what you're doing is a part of that. You're healing the person.
Yeah, I agree. And with so many people losing their jobs, and us as men being, our identity being tied to what we do, this is going to be, it's pretty traumatic for people. Mm-hmm. So most human doings, not human beings. And so they really evaluate themselves based on what they're doing. And if you just lost what you're doing, that's different. And how do we as men process that? And how do we, so it's, there's a lot there. There's a lot of opportunity in the environment of what's happening right now. So I agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Matt, I really appreciate what you're doing. You're definitely on an incredible journey. This is something that the world needs. And I love to see that someone like you, with the experience that you have, the knowledge and the skill that you have to influence people, that you're out there doing something important with your life and essentially changing the world.
We're working on it.
Yep, one step at a time, right?
Exactly. I don't do one step at a time very well.
So. About 100 steps, right?
Yeah, one really big step for sure.
Yeah. Well, nothing wrong with that, because I think the faster we can, or you or we as just in general, the faster we can change the world, the better. I know that this will impact many lives, and I appreciate you being on the show today. And with that, I would like to just mention to our listeners, if you would like to learn more about Matt and his journey with The Unbound Man, please connect with him. You can find him at theunboundman.com, or you can reach him via email at matt.burton@theunboundman.com. And that's Burton spelled B-U-R-T-O-N.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you're ready to reach incredible levels of success in your life, business, and career, start your journey now at www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine at acceleratedresults365.com.